Hey, hey, welcome back to Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It. I am your host, Ben Sargent, and today we're talking to one of the last commercial fishermen families in NYC. Larry Seaman and Larry Jr. Seaman are here. You literally are the last of the bait fishermen, at least. Can I give you that?
Last of the eel fishermen.
Unbelievable. Yeah. That's why I chose that song. That was, Electric Eel, the intro there. But we're not dealing with electric eels, thankfully, today. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you guys, why is it, what makes you the last of this sort of dying generation? I mean, it's sad, but I'm guessing, Larry, you wouldn't wish this upon your son, and yet your son has taken it up in one form or another.
Yeah, well, at one time I wanted my son to get, a New York City job or something because of the way the eel business was going down. The ethnic neighborhoods were changing, and the tree huggers and stuff want to save all the horseshoe crabs. They want them.
That's my dad, by the way.
Oh, excuse me.
He's written 3 books on horseshoe crabs. Go on. No, don't stop yourself.
But, the horseshoe crab is the prime bait,
yep.
And there is a problem with horseshoe crabs, if just the fishermen that use them took them out of the water and use them for their own bait to bait their traps, the conch fishermen and the eel fishermen, there wouldn't be any problem. Okay. But what has happened is Delaware Bay and down to Virginia and New Jersey has stopped the fishermen from taking them.
Sure.
So now they've created a market up here.
Right.
And, people jump into it. They see where they can get a couple hundred horseshoe crabs a day, $1 a piece, $200 in a couple hours' work.
Right.
And so it made a gold rush.
So walk us through exactly what it is you do, because I think most people out there have no idea. When I say that you're bait fishermen, you basically are trapping and catching the bait that people use to go fishing for the big fish.
I like kind of call us like a jack of all trades. Basically, to survive in the, as a commercial fisherman nowadays, you can't stay in one. You can't be like in the heydays used to have like a Long Island, you had clammers. That's all they did was clam. Sure. Nowadays, you got to be able to do everything. And basically, our season runs, we usually would traditionally start, the year would start in March. We'd catch rib mussels, which people would use to catch flounders. And, from that, the spearing would start to show up, and the spearing and little silver sides, which we catch, put up in anywhere from 1 to 2 pound packages to 5 pound packages.
And that's what the bass and the bluefish go for, right?
Well, mainly the
fluke.
It's a huge, that's one of the number one baits on Long Island is the spearing.
Yeah.
But
I see spearing jumping out of the water, right?
Definitely a forage.
Okay.
There's no doubt about it. When people tend to buy the spearing and stuff like that, they're going for fluke.
Right.
And we also catch the live minnows, which killies, we call them.
Killies, yep.
And that's really not a huge traditional bait on Long Island anymore. It seems to be more of a, out of Long Island, we have to go out of Long Island to sell it. But And then when the fall kicks in is when we set our eel pots for commercial food fishing, for catching the eels for eating. Mm-hmm. Also, we take the smaller eels, which are used for bass fishing.
Yeah.
Once that slacks off,
which I gotta say, I've been out there with my friends, and some of them love to fish, and others really have a hard time taking that wiggling, writhing eel and putting it on the hook.
It's definitely interesting to take someone the first time, and watch them try to put that on the hook. Like you said, it's just it's falling on the floor, and then
it's not easy.
And then they get it wrapped around the line.
Exactly.
And, so
the thing puts up a fight. But there's nothing that looks more tasty to a big bass down there than
it's probably number one bait in the fall. So.
Okay. So back to Larry Senior here for a second. Can you make a living at this?
Well, for many, many years, from the time I was first married, I got married when I was 19 years old. And I supported my family just catching eels, 100%, summertime and wintertime. The man would come from Maine once a week with a tank truck, and he would pick up all the eels that I caught, 52 weeks out of the year. Only times I didn't go was Christmas and maybe a couple of other occasions,
Mm-hmm.
But I made a living. I didn't get rich at it.
Right.
I paid my bills. I raised my family. Larry doesn't look like he
missed out. No, he looks like you raised him well.
He looks healthy.
Yeah, he looks healthy. You had him eating eels. You had him eating bait.
Right. But I mean, I did it because I love to catch them.
Sure.
It was what we do. You know what I mean?
But your dad didn't want you to do this, did he?
No. No, he wanted me to become a lawyer or a doctor. I used to walk around the house with boots on. He says, what do you want to be, a damn clam digger all your life? You know, and I was like, yeah. You know,
that is what I want to do.
Right. You know, and I started doing it, and I started catching soft-shell crabs and selling them. And all of a sudden, I saw holy mackerel. When I was a kid, like preteens, you know, it's like, wow, I made $20. I mean, back then,
yeah,
in the 50s, $20 was a lot of money, you know.
Absolutely.
I bought my first boat. And then I saw an old man, this guy, Pete Myers, he was out catching eels. Mm. And I was like, I'd like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a boat similar to that, made a rig like he was using. It's called an eel comb. It's like a 14-foot stick, about 1 inch thick by 3 inches wide.
Yeah.
And every inch, you drill a hole through it, and you put an ice pick.
Okay.
And then it's similar to this here. If this had a handle on it,
sure.
You put a cable from here to the bow of the boat, and you tow it through the water.
Okay.
About 10 knots, and you hit the eels, and they get stuck on in, and you just pick it up. And
all right, so you're not actually, when you go out fishing for them, you're not setting traps the same.
Oh, no.
No, we are.
We are now. That was just one form of
what
this fellow was doing at that time. Right. That intrigued me.
I remember the old traps that looked like, it looks like a lampshade, kind of. You remember those antique ones, right? Mm-hmm. We have one of those in my house, I think.
Yeah, I brought an eel trap for you. An eel trap for you.
Oh, great. Yeah, I'd love to see what the
I just
the
didn't
modern...
have the heart to drag it through that restaurant.
Those guys hate us. We brought axes through there, cooking supplies. I mean, yeah, the poor restaurant here. So, I mean, tell me, I guess, what's a regular day like for you guys? Do you guys fish together now? I know you're...
Yeah, we fish together. Well, depending
not
on...
Not all the time.
Not all the time. Depending on what we're going after, you know, it depends. But there are times where we're doing separate things.
So you get up crack of dawn?
There are days where we leave the house at 3 in the morning, and we do not get back in the house till about probably, 10 o'clock sometimes? Around 10 or so.
Sometimes.
Yeah. And then you have to get up all over and do it again the next day. But then you run into situations like this where the weather's been complete crap for the last week.
Right.
Where we haven't been able, you know, there's nothing to do.
We've been working on traps.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you have to mend them, repair them all.
Yeah, that's a constant
and part of it. And now that they're cleaning the waters up, we got these teredo worms. They're like a waterborne termite.
Okay.
And they eat the wood up, the wood frame in the trap. They just eat it up, and it turns, if you crack it in half, I should have brought a piece to show you. Mm. If you crack it in half, it looks like peanut brittle on the inside.
Because they're just eating it
completely
out.
Hollowed out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh. And I want to, why is it that you guys are one of the last boats out there? I mean, you're out in Jamaica Bay, right?
Which
is sort of en route to the Rockaways.
That's right,
As you go over Broad Channel, mm-hmm. that's kind of your fishing mm-hmm. grounds there.
Yep.
What has happened? You know, obviously some people say it's, you know, the waste and dumping and the pollution. Other people say that it has to do with, you know, all the, you know, industry and houses and stuff that have been built up along the area. And then there's people who make the argument that it's overfishing. And then there's people who make the argument that there's plenty of fishing and that it's just the regulations. So... You guys are here to set the record straight. Since you're the guys out on the water every day, I would imagine you know something about
all right.
this.
Our biggest threat right now is commercial fishermen within Jamaica Bay is hands down Gateway National Recreational Area.
Uh-huh.
They officially don't have an agenda against us, but behind closed doors they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, like, the way they think and they feel is that there is supposed to be no commercial operations within the confines of an, you know, federal park.
I see.
But the thing is, my father and guys before them were on that bay long before Gateway ever came in.
And never had a boat pull up alongside you just saying, show us your license, blah, blah, blah.
We never had, you know, it was never an issue. They were there like almost grandfathered before that was there. So now Gateway came in, and it's been the last,
since 1972 they came. Mm-hmm. And they promised me then, I went to a meeting because, you know, rumors were flying left and right. Oh, they're going to stop this, stop that.
Mm-hmm.
We went down in mass and had some meetings at Floyd Bennett Airfield. What they did, they broke us down into smaller groups because they couldn't handle the mass of people that showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was part of the commercial fishing group, and it was myself and a man by the name of John Cameron, which he's still alive today. He's 83 years old, God bless him. And they told us, don't worry about it. It's status quo. Whatever you've been doing, do. We're going to abide by the conservation rules of New York State. Mm-hmm. Whatever they say, that's what we'll go by. Mm-hmm. And I never got anything in writing because, you know, it was more or less done on a handshake. Okay, sure. We're good to go. We can fish. Fine. And at that time...
Which is the way fishing worked for many, many, many years, right?
Yeah.
Handshakes meant something.
That's right. Yeah. Still means something to me. It doesn't mean a lot to a hell of a lot of other people, but I still shake somebody's hand, and I mean it when I shake a hand. I look them in the eye.
Right.
And other people won't look you in the eye.
Right.
But anyway, at that time, there was this fellow by the name of Carl Kirshner. He was making a living out of the bay. Mm-hmm. John Cameron was making a living out of the bay. There was a place called the Kettle of Fish Smokehouse on Cross Bay Boulevard, owned by Hans Schroer. He was making a living out of the bay. Hmm. There was this another man by the name of John Bogart. He came from Canarsie. He made a living catching, and this is all catching eels.
Right.
Catching eels out of the bay, and myself. And then there was Uncle Walter's Smokehouse on Rockaway Turnpike in Rosedale. And Pete Myers caught a lot of eels for them, and he made a living. And then there was an old man that lived in a houseboat. And he used to bob for eels, which I can tell you that is.
With a line?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I can tell you how they do that if you get time.
No, go for it.
I'll tell you. he used to have, pictures, he'd take nylon string, right? He'd go out at low tide and he'd dig bloodworms on top of the sandbar off of the Inwood Country Club. Mm-hmm. There was a place called the High Bar there. He would dig the bloodworms and then he'd take a needle and thread and he'd take... and go to the length of the worm and thread them onto this.
Uh-huh.
And then he would take a bunch of them, make a ball, like the size of a baseball.
Right.
Tie it off in a knot and put it on a string. And he had a little, picture this, he had a little wooden handle here, and he had another one here, and he sat in a boat in the middle. He had like an 18-foot rowboat.
Yeah.
And he'd go like this. They called it bobbing for eels. He'd go up and down. And the eel has a very small teeth.
Uh-huh.
You'll see in this eel.
We have one, by the way, guys.
And when that eel would bite into that ball of nylon, he'd get his teeth all tangled up in it, and you'd feel like that, and he'd pull up.
So no hooks. They're literally just shaking them into the boat.
The eel would just be bit onto that ball, and he'd keep going.
Wow.
And here would come myself as a teenager with this prong fork, toe bite, and he would stop, and he'd go... raise his fist to me and shake his hand at me, and I'm like,
like I've got the system, right?
Right,
right, right.
But he called it Bob, and his name was Captain Jack. They called him.
Okay,
and he'd put him in cloth canvas bags, two of them, and he'd get on the Jamaica bus, and he'd take him into Jamaica to the fish market that way every day with his boots on, two bags of eels, and away he went.
And what's left of the markets? I mean, who is remaining? There's almost nothing, right?
Nah, there's no markets no more. That's why we're kind of like the last of them, and it's kind of got to be like a part-time business with us because we've had to catch other things because the ethnic neighborhoods, I mean, like down here in Greenpoint, I mean...
Everything's changing.
On Grand Avenue...
You know, it just recycles through different cultures come in.
Right.
The biggest demand...
So it used to be that people were eating half the stuff that you were catching,
right?
Because I've even seen the Indian guys out there eating the whiting. I mean, the
spearing.
Yeah, the spearing.
Oh, yeah. The Italian people eat the spearing, too, at Christmas time. They make a pie out of it, you know. Yeah.
And the Polish have their things, and the Italians, and the...
But it seems... Right? Not to interrupt you, but it seems like to me, like, I've grown up watching this. You know, I've been exposed to eeling since as long as I can remember.
Right.
It just seems, I mean, I have a lot of Italian friends who... do not eat eels.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I watch their fathers and their grandfathers love it. You know,
absolutely.
So I think it's just, you know, the generations, you know, tastes are changing now, and they're not, they don't enjoy those things. And that's why I think the biggest market right now, as far as eels, you'd have to agree, would be the Asian market with the sushi restaurants.
Sure.
That's where it is. And
but
even
that,
hard people to do business.
And it's very tough. There's no give.
They want every eel a pound and better.
Uh-huh.
And what do you do with the half and three quarter pounders? I mean, you know, it's hard.
Hmm.
I came down here for years and years on Grand Avenue. There was a fish market there called Grand Street Fish Market. They had a tank right in the window where every week I'd bring them at least 100 pounds of eels. Christmas time, they would use 5,000 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Then up the street from them a little ways on Grand Avenue was Blue Sea Fish Market.
Mm-hmm.
And that man there used to use a couple thousand pounds for eels.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And then on Graham Avenue, there was Joe's Fish Market.
Yeah.
I used to go there. He was right across from the projects on Graham.
Sorry to interrupt, but I mean, does this stuff, does it make you sad, angry, or is it just the way it goes? Do you have to just chalk it up to the change?
I don't know. It makes me sad, mm-hmm. and it makes me nervous mm-hmm. for the simple reason for my son. My son's 35 years old.
Right.
I mean, I made a living, mm-hmm. you know, but the regulations now, we could set out 100 traps, mm-hmm. and we could make a halfway decent living.
Yeah.
But the thing is, last fall, we couldn't even get horseshoe crabs to set half of the traps.
Right.
Because of the regulations that they put on as sure. far as using the horseshoe crabs.
And without those horseshoe crabs, you might as well not even set the pots.
That's the ultimate bait.
There's just that much of a difference between sure. what you're going to catch. I mean, it's a necessary thing. We need those right. crabs. Without those crabs, we're dead in the water.
Right. You could put clams in there. You could catch some eels. Mm-hmm. You could put a rock in there. You're going to catch one or two eels. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
But if you want to be successful, you need the horseshoe crabs.
Sure. I mean, for me, it's sad only because, you know, it's like Boston, where I'm from, has always taken fishing very seriously as a yep. part of its pastime, its culture. And there's no reason that New York should. New York has, if not as, maybe more so, of a strong, thriving, or what was, industry. And they somehow just don't take it seriously. I would think for New York, whether it's as stupid as just tourism alone, that they would have kept the market down where it was, that they would keep you guys in business, uh-huh. just because it's sorry to be so artsy-fartsy, but no. I mean, it's a beautiful thing.
That's exactly right. Like the Fulton Fish Market, I mean, that was kind of a thing. People came from around the world just to walk through them smelly, wet streets. I mean, I used to go to Fulton Fish Market all the time. I used to deal with wood shellfish down there.
Yeah.
I used to sell to R.J. Cornelius, mm-hmm. to Carter Fish.
Mm-hmm. I remember...
And there was another guy on the other corner called Mo Behrens.
Yeah.
I mean, I would go in there 3 o'clock in the morning when I was just first got my license. I was 16, 17 years old. It was a bar called the Paris Bar.
Yeah.
I mean, as a kid pulling up in there, I'd look and people would be in there drinking.
You'd see everything there, right?
Unbelievable. Well, I mean,
those guys are personalities. I'm just going to cut you guys off for 1 second. We're going to take a quick break. Okay. We're going to come back. We're going to actually prepare an eel.
Okay.
Take a listen to this song. It's, you know, a little silly, but it does have something to do with your past here and present.
Well, I'm on the Downeaster, Alexa, and I'm cruising through Block Island Sound. But tonight I am Nantucket bound. We took on diesel back in Montauk yesterday. Left this morning from the Bell and Gardner's Bay. Like all the locals here, I've had to sell my home. Too proud to leave, I worked my fingers to the bone so I could own. I got bills to pay and children who need clothes. I know there's fish out there, but where God only knows. They say these waters aren't what they used to be. But I got people back online who count on me. So if you see my Downeaster, Alexa, and if you since they took
see you like striped bass bait.
Yeah. We're back, by the way, guys. Right. And we have a skinned eel that's still writhing in front of us.
Still wiggling.
Yeah, he's still like it.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's bait?
He's here, feel his teeth. They're the teeth.
Larry's sticking an eel face in my face. Great. Great. Thanks. Oh, yeah. And his tongue, too. Yeah, they're not real sharp. It's like sandpaper.
Right. And that's what used to get stuck in those worms when I told you.
Our producer over there, Nat, is freaking out in the other room. He's sick as is. He was not feeling well today. And all he needed was to see a headless, writhing eel to just make his day.
But if you would have hooked this through the lips now and troll this here, some striped bass
would go crazy.
Yeah, because
that.
The action of the skin.
Yeah, but what some guys actually do with the, they take the actual skins and actually put the skins over top of their surf plugs.
Ah, really? Just to add a little tail to it.
Sure. Just a little realism, I guess.
Unbelievable. All right, so we're going to, we're basically going to fry this guy up, I think, right? Is that the idea?
I got to get de-slimed.
Mike, you want to hand me the, what do I need here? Pan?
Yeah. I got to cut him up in pieces.
All right, go for it. I wanted to ask you about, you guys, you know, I've been joking with you, but you sort of are looked at sometimes as the new terrorists that are threatening the JFK International Airport there when you're seen in camo with, I'm not pressing here, but I mean, basically, when you guys are out there dressed in camo with, binoculars, you're all you're doing there is looking at birds that are working over the bait you're catching. Is that right?
Yeah. Well,
we don't really dress in camo. We wear our Grundin's rain gear and stuff.
But if you're Coast Guard or you're DEC or you're Homeland Security, you could be confused, or they're just a bunch of idiots.
There's no way you can confuse us for terrorists.
Overreaction is what it is. You know,
you guys aren't keeping cannons of some sort under your fish.
Let's put this in perspective. Before 9/11, we used to, on the Nassau County side of the bay, we used to be able to duck hunt. We actually would shoot, and I eat duck, and my friends eat duck. We used to be able to hunt right there. Airplanes rolling over our heads. Once 9/11 happened, that next year, we went there, and they came out with the helicopter, with the guys jumping out of the helicopter with SWAT gear on, and they escorted us out of there, and we're not allowed in there anymore for that same reason.
For that reason.
But meanwhile, they're worried about bird strikes, you know. But I mean,
and they shoot birds all the time.
The
airport does.
Yeah. And they don't discriminate what they shoot. They shoot the herons.
Oh, they shoot everything. Really? If it has wings, it dies, and it's.
And then you guys aren't allowed to shoot one single bird, which would be I would think advantageous to them if you were controlling
we're helping
the population.
Them and, you know, we enjoy the harvesting the wild birds. It's always been traditionally Bayman. That's what you did in the wintertime. You went duck hunting, and some of them were guides and stuff like that.
Right.
So,
what about muskrats? I read something about muskrats.
There's not. I don't know if it's a change in the ecosystem in the area. We really don't see them. I mean, am I right or wrong, Dad? There used to be tons of muskrats around, and there's not.
Well, there's still muskrats around.
So there were muskrat trappers who were living in New York City, making a living trapping muskrats.
There probably still are a few. I mean, I don't know any, but there's probably a handful around that are still trapping muskrats.
Do I have to go out and get a muskrat license if I want to?
You have to have a trapping license.
Are you kidding? You got to have a horseshoe crab license now too.
Right, right.
If you want to catch turtles, you got to have a turtle license.
Right. Unbelievable.
If I want to get laid, I got to get a get laid license. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I have to go get one of those, because that must be the problem.
I mean, that was my argument when Corey and I got taken into custody by
Corey,
JFK.
Corey is who? Just so we just...
Corey from the New York Times.
Okay, so Corey, he's a friend, Kilgannon, right? He comes out.
Yeah,
and
he's my buddy.
He just wants to film what you guys do, right? And what went down?
Well, the Port Authority boat came to us and said that we were taking pictures illegally. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, my cousin's husband worked on that boat there for 25 years. The fellas on the boat knew who I was.
Right.
But there was one lieutenant in there. He says, well, that lieutenant on the beach want to see you. Anyway, he says, follow us to the beach. I'm like, okay. Well, when I got to the beach, they took me immediately out of my boat, put me in a car like a common criminal, took me into the middle of Kennedy Airport and interrogated me.
Unbelievable.
Did you know who those people in the boat were? I said, yeah, they're reporters from New York Times. Sure. He says, well, they could have been terrorists. I said, yeah, they could have been my And if they didn't have balls, you know what I mean?
Well, but to be honest, though, Corey is a bit of a terrorist. There were a few counts against him for riding his bike on the sidewalk. So,
I know.
So he is in the realm of terrorist.
I know. I shit right in my knickers when I looked out the door of the little room they had me in, and I saw them carting him off in handcuffs. I was like, oh, my God. Then I found out he had an outstanding warrant. Mm-hmm. Here it is, you know?
Yeah.
He was a real terrorist for riding his bicycle on a sidewalk in Manhattan. I was like, holy shit. I said, if this ain't the stupidest stuff I've ever seen.
But, you know, it is 9-11, it is, but it's also New York. I mean, New York just sucks for this. I mean, there's so many laws here, it's unbelievable.
Well, basically what they did with them that day, they just want to make an example out of them. They wanted them to see, like, because I think a couple days prior, there was three guys in a little rowboat washed up on the beach, and they were wandering around the airport, and they got caught with their pants down. So Corey and them just happened to, you know, next day go out there and decide to take pictures of my father and whatnot. Right. And I guess they saw the cameras and thought, all right, here's our chance to let's show what we're doing. And of course, like everything else, go overboard. And listen, I agree. It's necessary. You know, we are living in dangerous times. But the same token, let's not be stupid. Let's think.
Sure.
And let's look at the situation. You see us out there. We're out there every day.
Right.
I mean, we're out there every day in the same boat, doing the same thing, pulling the same traps. How can you... You know, if you saw something different, then maybe, but...
It's got to be boredom, and, you know, these guys are trained to be, you know, aggressive dickheads, and so, you know, they come out and they're like, oh, here's their big opportunity, you know, let's bust these bait fishermen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what happened?
Why, instead of calling the DEC, the Conservation Department, I always call them the Constipation Department.
Well,
because they're a pain in the ass.
They are a pain in the ass. I mean, I'm sorry. Some of those guys are great. I actually used to work for them, but we were doing very different thing. We were doing iFish New York, which was just taking kids fishing. Mm-hmm. We were hardly, and we did do some eradication of invasive species. But that was the nice division. The pain in the ass division, I mean, those guys are the worst.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, what it is also, too, what they do is they're taking, you know, kids from upstate that are college kids, you know, go to college, and they're like, they don't have a clue what's going on down here.
They've never been 100 miles within water, right?
And then, like, you get them check, you know, they check out, and they're like, they don't even know what they're checking. They don't even know the laws themselves. Like, how can you enforce laws when you don't even know the laws yourself?
Right,
like,
right.
So it's kind of like,
We try to work with them, you know, I mean, but... I mean, just let us fish. We want to do is work. We don't want to.
We just
want to
go to work
chops.
And make some money.
Right.
We don't want to, you know, like a lot of areas where we know that some people, you know, the green peace people or whatever you want to call them tree huggers, when they want to come down and observe the horseshoe crabs, we don't go in an area like that. Sure. You know, if I'm going to set my net, if I see, you know, it's like on a Sunday, I'm out of the bay by 10 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'm gone. This way here. When the weekend warriors come out, they don't have to look at me and say, "Oh my God, he's catching striped bass." Well, I'm not.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, that seems to be, you know, you get, there's a lot of misconception. People don't understand, like, you know, they see us out there with the net. They don't, you know, we've had guys ride past us with fishing rods in a boat, and they think that, you know, they'll say it under their breath, not understanding that we can hear it. Oh, look, they're taking all the striped bass. But meanwhile, we're catching their bait for them. They don't get it. Just like, it's complete ignorance sometimes, you know?
Yeah. So, we're preparing the eel as we speak here. No, that's pepper.
Oh, you have salt? You have
some salt? We'll get you salt.
You got to show them that trick.
you got your eggs over there.
Yeah, okay.
And you guys cook at home quite a bit, yeah?
Yep.
What would you do with the other stuff you catch? I mean, if it's not going... Your brother has a bait shop, right?
So yeah.
Some of it goes there. Some of it's sold.
We have a motto. If it swims or crawls, we eat it.
There you go. Catch it, cook it, eat it. I got the best guys I could ever have found for this radio show. Thank you. All right. Let me throw this over here. Let's see. Mike, you want to hand me the... I'll put... You want some olive oil?
What do you want?
Pan?
A little EVOO?
EVOO.
You see, I watch.
Now... What happened down?
You're gonna need
that. Was your first offense? What happened over, you know, down by 9/11? You were I was told that you were kind of taking people by boat into restricted areas.
Yeah, well, I was taking Charlie DeLuff is who I was taking, and Corey Kilgannon, he can tell you who he is. He was like the most aggressive reporter for the New York Times.
Uh-huh.
Now he works for the Chicago Tribune, I believe it is.
Uh-huh.
Hell of a guy.
He was a great, good guy. I loved him. You know? But when 911 came, he called me up and he goes, "Larry, you got to take me to Manhattan." So I was like, all right. I came in with the boat, met him at the dock, and he says, "We got to steam over there." So I went down, I got more gas, I steamed around Rockaway Point. Just about when I got to the Verrazano Bridge, Coast Guard boats came from both directions, you know, the west side and the east side, because they had that blocked off.
Right.
And they're like, oh, loudspeaker, you can't go through there, you know, and the harbor's closed and everything. And Charlie's hollering, keep going, keep going. I was like, he looked on the bow, and I seen them machine guns and the guys that were behind him, and I said, screw you, Charlie. Hey, we get blown out of the water here.
You and know? You probably would have been, too.
So he was like,
that's scary.
Put me off on the beach. I'm going to take a rubber raft and paddle across the East River. And you ask Corey, he'd have done it. I mean, he was just...
You couldn't stop him. Really? Nothing, no, couldn't stop nothing him. Nothing stopped him. No.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, he did quite a few stories on us. We took him with us. And, you know, whenever the New York Times would want a story on fishing or something else, you know, I always said, well, hop in the boat. Come on, you know.
Yeah.
But after I got arrested there with Corey, I got a little gun shy. You know, I was like, man, I went through this shit for 8 hours.
It's not worth it. Well, yeah.
And when I came home, my son said to me, hey, old boy, come and look at the computer. Tell him what
they're
saying.
Yeah, no, they were going after him for, they wanted to charge him with violating the security zone around the airport. But at this time, they had no boundary around the airport. Nothing showing a security zone. No signs saying security zone. Nothing. So how do you enforce something that doesn't
exist?
How
are you supposed to know?
Now they do. They have white buoys. And right. It's a continual fight. Like the guys that are bass fishing in the spring, they continually get back and forth. Like you go in, because, you know, when you see... You know, you see bunker potted up on a beach and a bass is slamming into him. You're just gonna go past the bass anyway, you know.
So, of course.
But the fine that they're gonna charge him with, could have been in prison for 10 years in federal prison,
and
it was $100,000 fine.
Unbelievable.
So, and that next day, I happened to be driving in the car, and I happened to had I think it was John Gambling on one of the news commentators, and they did a story on it, and they had the Coast Guard there, and they had him or nobody else representing. So I called into the show, and I said, "Listen, I said you're giving a one sided viewpoint to this." So I started landing.
Did you say who you were?
I said who I was. Yeah. I said I'm Larry Seaman's son, Larry Seaman, and you know. I said to the guy in the Coast Guard, and the guy in the Coast Guard totally got flustered. He was like, I was tripping over something. So, exactly. How can you afford something you don't have? You know, so, and then within a week, they had signs and buoys and everything else. So,
totally unfair.
But again, like, they're really not, like, I don't understand what their purpose is behind it. Like, these guys aren't going to come. I mean, you come down by us where we live.
Yeah.
And you could stand in my yard, and if they really wanted to take down, God forbid, take down a plane, they could do it right there.
Well, what they don't understand is us bay people, or whatever you want to say, fishermen, we're like their first line of defense.
Yeah, we're out in the bay. We're out there every day.
We
see something different.
We know who belongs there, who don't belong there,
right.
You know.
Right.
I mean, how many times, numerous times, we help people stranded? Sure. I even pulled the park police off one time when they were up on a bar, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that's all. That was then, and now is now, as exactly. I was told. So there you go.
Tell me, Larry Sr., who the famed, who is it, Killy?
Killy Mary.
Killy Mary is?
Oh, Killy Mary.
Yeah.
Killy Mary was, I tell you, she was a great person.
Yeah.
She was like my grandmother, you know, but she... She dressed in, like, if you could picture an old house dress with all mud down the front of it and stuff. She had a floating bait barge on the west side of the Marine Parkway Bridge right in Rockaway Inlet. And she sold salted squid, salted clams. She sold live killies, live minnows, and spearing with this fella, Jack. Jack smuggled her here in the bottom of a freighter from Portugal. And then they went on that barge, and then she ran... the bait business, but she went out in the bay and she caught killies and stuff. And
was she a good looking woman back in the day?
No,
but no. You know who was? You know this famous woman up at the Fulton Fish Market?
Who was that?
Something Ann, something crazy Ann, or what?
Shopping cart Annie.
She's about 90 years old.
Well,
I saw a photograph of her. She was beautiful back in the day. All the fishermen wanted a piece of it.
yeah.
Okay.
Well. When she used to sit on a little old doorway of her floating barge, all the boats would float up in front of her there, and she'd be sitting there, you know, with this old house dress on, getting warm, and she'd pull it like above her knees, and she never wore no bloomers. And all them old dudes there on the boat would be kind of like peeping in. She'd say, hey, you son of a bitch, you want to look? And she'd pick her dress up. I'd be like, oh. So she took a liking to me. She'd go, because I was always out in the bay catching eels, and she was catching Achilles, you know? She'd always bring me out.
The real story behind Larry Jr. comes out. No wonder you're such a good bait fisherman. Mom and Dad. No, I'm just kidding.
She'd bring me a peach, or she'd bring me an apple, or she's always trying to give me something, you know. And I would sell her live killies when I was a kid. I was like maybe 15, 16. Mm. She came to my house one time by boat, mm-hmm. was walking around on our porch, and my mother goes, there's an old witch out on the porch. My mother grabbed my mother always had a single barrel 410 shotgun that she shot the rats off the dock
in
with.
Queens.
Yeah.
In Queens.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. Good to know.
And my mother goes, running out the door with this shotgun. I'm like, Ma, don't shoot Mary, you know? So Mary was out there with her straw hat on and her one tooth in the bottom lip. And she's like, where's that son of a bitch? She didn't bring me no killies. So my mother says, you better go out there. So I go out there. Mary's like, I want killies. So I was like, okay. So then one time I had my girlfriend up a little creek.
Uh-oh.
And yeah, we was making love up there. And the girl said, I don't want to get caught. I said, nobody will ever come up here. We had our heads underneath the deck of the boat. And we were getting it on. And all of a sudden we heard clunk on the side of the boat. I was like, she said, what was that? I said, I don't know. Probably a seagull dropped a clam. So I poked my head up under the bow and I looked right into Mary's face.
Oh.
And she goes, oh, you little son of a bitch, what are you doing? I was like, oh, man. And I had to push my boat because I couldn't start the motor. It was all shallow water. I had to push all the way past Mary and all her killie pots she had out. And, well, that was the last of that girl. Never saw her, never talked to me, nothing. So when I went down to Mary's the next day to sell her bait, she took one of these long squid bags, about 6 inches long and 3 inches wide.
Oh, no.
And she goes, here, you son of a bitch, take these, or else you make maybes. And I was so embarrassed, I didn't even know what to take them. And then she made me a sandwich. I never forget it. Ham and cheese. And when she put it together and she smacked it, when she gave it to me, her fingerprints were still on the white bread. And I was, but I ate it and I'm surviving.
Well, you know. Yeah, well, you know.
But that was Mary. And
there was only one lady out there who was catching bait. You should have probably, you know.
Forever. She was there, believe me, she was there for years and years and years. I never knew what happened to her, you know.
Huh.
But somebody told me that she had a real lot of money and she was very, very rich.
Interesting.
When she came ashore, she had a big house somewhere in Bergen Beach.
Wow.
So, I don't know.
What do we, where we got a little distracted.
Mary was my buddy.
All your girlfriends here. What's so you got the eel now in an egg
batter,
yeah?
Like I was going to make scrambled eggs. I just whipped up the eggs here.
All right.
I got the eels. I'm whipping them around in.
And you've left the backbone, the cartilage in there,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So how's it work? Is when you eat around the bone?
Yeah.
So it's like a...
I just cut the top fin off.
So I've been doing it wrong for many years is what you're telling me right now.
Pardon my fingers, but I just cut the top fin off and the bottom fin off.
Okay.
This way when you're eating it, you don't get that caught, you know?
And how do you eat it, though? You hold it on the sides or what?
Yeah, hold like an ear of corn, but you don't have to have those little plastic corn holders that you spin it around with.
So, so you're eating around the backbone, basically.
Exactly right.
Okay. How hot do you want this over here?
It's got to be like you're making French fry.
Rest that oil, because you need to get it. You need to get them down in that oil. You better add the rest of that oil.
Let me add it. Right.
And I'm going to need a little dish to roll these. Well, maybe I can do it on paper.
Propane indoors seems to be my. This is my new motto: is keep the propane cranking, and doesn't matter if you're indoors or out. We're probably going to die of asphyxiation.
Don't worry, Ben. Rachel Ray will be proud of you.
Yeah, right? The fire department came to my house just 2 weeks ago about the propane. I don't know.
Proud of you using that EVOO. That's our favorite thing.
This is just regular olive oil, but it's still good.
And so this is the same way that my grandfather always did flounder.
Right.
Yeah. Although he would use... what did he use? Cornstarch. A little bit of cornstarch in there. Don't ask me why. I have no idea. Yeah.
Cornstarch?
Yeah. I don't know. What's that do?
I don't know.
Who knows? It's probably one of those tricks that didn't do anything, but it threw people. It got them all confused.
Maybe it's for old-time Cialis.
Exactly. All right.
I don't know if that's hot or not.
Well,
I'll get him here for now.
Okay, sure. Sure. And that area, just as we're cooking here, but that area was where the sort of flatlands there where you got, or I don't want to, what do you call it? The mud flats there.
Mud flats.
That was during Prohibition, was a pretty serious area down there for...
Well, that would be the Broad rum Channel runners. Area was like, that was considered like the rum, where all the rum runners used to be. And
Ruffle Bar, from what the old man Bogart used to tell me.
Yeah.
He told me they had casinos and hotels and whorehouses and everything on there. They had gambling and You name it, and it was there doing. That was before my time. I mean, this man was, I'd say, in his late 70s when I was 18 years old.
Okay.
So how old that would
make whatever that makes you. You know that bridge going out? I fish under that bridge sometimes. You know the snappers are good in there, right? Oh, yeah. One time, I had already bought a huge bluefish actually from a buddy, and just as a joke, I was with Mike, and it was pretty funny. We
it's looking pretty hot.
That's hot. I took that bluefish and I walked along the bridge there where everybody was fishing, and they were catching, you know, 7-8 inch little bluefish, and I'm walking there. That's gonna be. Oh, there we go. Beautiful. Is it?
Yeah. Okay. You don't want them to burn.
All right. And so I walked by with this 3-foot bluefish while they were all catching their little snappers, man. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
You can put it back on.
Okay. All right. Hold on. There we go. Oh, it certainly sounds good. Yeah. Awesome.
You see what the big problem with the commercial fishing industry, too, is? It's like the fellas that are catching shrimp down in the Gulf of Mexico. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little different than us catching eels, but. They're losing their houses, they're losing their cars,
right.
Losing their boats,
right?
Because of all the imported shrimp and the farm-raised shrimp that are coming from China, mm-hmm. and they're not good for you to eat anyway. They're all full of antibiotics.
Sure.
And everybody's gone tilapia crazy. Yeah, you gotta let that cool down.
Yeah, which
otherwise
I'm,
the outside's gonna get.
There's another fork over there. Give the other fork so you can turn it.
Oh, all right.
I'm not a big fan of tilapia, really. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's meanwhile. I can't tell how many friends they all talk about tilapia. Right. I'm like, you have no idea. There's so many better fish out there to eat. You know, so much more flavorful fish.
Absolutely.
You know?
How do you guys feel about bluefish? I know New Yorkers aren't really big fans of it normally.
Honestly, the best way to have it is smoked. Have you ever had it smoked?
I love it
smoked. Yeah. Smoked is by far the only way I can really eat it. Snappers are good, but that's because, you know, but I'm talking those big 15 pound Goliath beasts, you know?
Them bunker eating.
You know, you ever hear, you are what you eat?
Yeah,
that's
right.
Exactly.
Big ones with the bunker. Mm-mm.
Right.
Well, it's the same thing, too, with the striped bass. You eat the bunker.
Is it true also what they say about the two best times in a fisherman's life are the day he buys his boat and the day he sells it?
I don't know.
I've heard that. I laugh at it and everything, but I'll tell you what. Yeah. I think a lot of my boat.
Right.
Matter of fact, I was working on my boat one time.
But I bet you've thought about selling it, too.
Well.
You've resisted. You haven't moved. You've kept your boat. You've done everything. But how hard has that been at times when I would imagine the temptation was there? I'm sure you've been offered a lot for your house and stuff on the water.
Thing is, we can never find what we have. We can never find again. No. Like where we're located and where everything's. I mean, basically, we wake up and we roll out of bed and we're at work, you know, like and. To backtrack a little bit, I mean, I understand why he's still done it because he loves it. And the same thing with me. I still do this because I love it. I mean, I absolutely every day wake up my life and love going to work.
And I mean, we're the same age now, you and me. It's like, you know, what are you going to do? You're 35 years old.
I mean, there are options, but the thing is, I honestly, I have friends of mine who went through 6 years of college and are living off ramen noodles right now because, you know, and I mean, I never came into this expecting to get rich or to make tons of money. I can't if I can pay my bills and, you know, feed myself. That's what I'm doing. So and honestly,
you have changed things up a little bit. You cater to the
sport fishing.
Sport fishing.
Well, yeah, like I said earlier in the show, you have to diversify. You cannot stay in one set thing. Otherwise, you're not going to make it. You know, and I think that has a lot to do with why there's not that many of us left anymore. The guys that, you know, their fathers were only clammers, and their fathers were only eel fishermen. Their fathers were only like dragomen. Like I grew up coming into this and seeing that in order to survive in this, I have to be able to do everything. You know, and that's why I've been like a sponge, and I've watched him, and I've watched, you know, people around me, and I've learned as much as I can because. I have to in order to survive, you know. So,
is there any hope for your kids that would
now,
you say
this honestly?
Yeah,
I'm probably gonna be the last of the baymen on the bay, unless I mean what you're having now is you have a lot of these guys we call part timers coming out, which are guys who have, you know, sanitation jobs who are firemen who are cops, and they'll come out and they'll set eel pots or crab pots and stuff like that,
like John with his father with the outfield.
Yeah, like John from the outfield, like, you know, he was a fireman.
His father passed away and left him the dragger.
But as far as full-time, where the only source of income is what you catch and what you sell, I honestly think I'm going to be the last one on Jamaica Bay.
Yeah.
it's kind of sad. It's kind of, I wouldn't say depressing, but it's like, but all at the same time, like, I take so much more pride in what I do because I know I'm the last, you know, so.
If what would have to change if there was some life to it?
Gateway has to be a little lenient with us and let us, you know, we're not out to clean the bay out.
Right.
You know, we're out there just to make a living like I've done for the last 50 years on the water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've been on the water 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's.
Do you guys think the recreational fishermen have any, do they make a dent in things?
Well.
The suits, the weekend warriors.
Right. Well. What's going on that level is what the government has done, and they're pretty slick, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
They've pit the recreational guys against the commercial guys for so many years.
Okay.
And they've tried to, you know, make the recreational guys feel like we're the enemy, and they tried to make us feel like all these recreational guys are just crybabies.
Hmm.
Just recently now, I think, the two groups are starting to come together as a whole.
Yesterday, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but when they marched on Washington
to save the fluke fishery. Like, mm-hmm. I think both groups are now realizing we need to work together.
Yeah,
if we don't, we're going to lose because not only is it the government against us, we have all these other groups. You have groups like PETA, groups like the Humane Society, you know, of the United States.
Sure,
it's not just like the anti-hunting, but they want to stop complete fish. They don't want you to go out with. They don't want you to be able to go out with a rod and reel and catch your dinner. You know, and you know, it's kind of like divided we fall. You know, if together we stand. So
and it doesn't even make sense because you know I was just talking to this guy the other day, Sean Simmon, who has a sustainable company where he basically like. Puts fishermen in touch with chefs so they can work directly together. And he said, man, the fishermen are so important because when you have an invasive species of some sort or something that's threatening all the longevity of a body of water, he's like, who are you going to go to? Yeah. You need those guys fishing those fish out.
Well, if you look into like they just did with the mitten crabs, we've been with all crab pots, as soon as we see them, we've been destroying them, and now they're telling us, originally they wanted us to save them and hand them over to them. Now they've decided they just want them destroyed completely. And I guess we're making a dent. They're saying that it's holding off. And even the green crabs, basically, green crabs, believe it or not, which you use for, you know, blackfish, they were an invasive species. They were not. They,
oh, really?
They came here. When did they start arriving? They came over in the holds of the ships, right?
Yeah,
they,
way back. I don't know
way,
exactly.
Way, way back. Right. But they were considered nuisance species. And believe it or not, they're very, very bad for... the hard clams.
Okay.
They're very. What was that? What did we read the other day? How many hard clams did he eat in a day?
Said one green crab can eat 500 clams
kidding.
In a day.
Yeah.
That took me back. I had to read that again to make sure I read what I read, you know?
And the amount of crabs that are around, I mean, where we crab, it's mind-boggling how many clams they must eat.
Right.
Because it's like, wow, you know, if one crab eats that many.
Unreal.
How many clams would that be, you know?
Guys, I'm going to have to cut us short because we got to eat here. we got to eat our eel after all this work, but you guys have been fantastic. Does anyone ever joke about your last name? I mean, Seaman.
Yeah,
and you guys
I've got
are
it all the... through high school.
I mean,
all
you're
through high school.
It's pretty funny, no?
Yeah.
I guess it's old at this point, huh?
Well, I used to go to school by boat.
Yeah,
and
really,
and
to where? From where to where?
From my house, I used to go over to Lawrence High School,
driving your own little outboard. No,
rode the anchor up on the bank. Hop the fence.
That's incredible.
One time I ripped the britches out of the ass out of my pants. I had to go to the sewing class and let the teacher sew my pants up so I could go to school. But
unreal.
In my yearbook, they put down a little bit something after everybody's name. They put down Seaman Sailor.
Seaman Sailor. Well, guys, thank you. I mean, I can't thank you enough. You guys are the best.
For us.
And best of luck. And I really hope that, you know, somehow together we can all figure out a way to keep the industry going. But who knows, right?
Right.
Who knows? All right, you've heard it here. Catch it, cook it, and eat it with the Seamans.
Yeah, to describe just what I smell. Lord, was it the catfish bait or something Bubba had ate? Was it those pickled eggs on the shell? Yeah, with a toothless grin, he said, boy, step right on in. Make yourself right at home. I said, no.